And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Hockey Show.
It is your Monday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. It's Ian Mendes, Julian McKenzie in the big chairs to kind of guide you through the weekend that was, the week that will be in the world of hockey. We'll talk a little bit about whether or not we were too early to rip on the Pittsburgh Penguins. We'll talk about some fun divisional races. Connor McDavid on the verge of doing something that I don't think enough people are talking about. We're going to talk about that. We've got tons of mailbag questions and comments to get to, all of that. I'll tell you though, Julian, I'm super excited, and I know it's tough. Look, this is a really tough Monday because it's the Monday after the time change, right? We've all switched to daylight savings time. Everyone's body clock is thrown off. I'm super excited that it sounds like this might be the last year we ever do this daylight savings clock switching nonsense, that it might legitimately be done after this year.
I had a back and forth with a friend of mine this weekend about the term daylight savings time. Apparently, we're saying it wrong. It should be daylight saving time. And
yeah,
not
there's
savings
no S on it,
time.
Right? Is that
there's
right?
There's no S, apparently.
Yeah.
And I was yesterday years old when I learned that was a thing. Yeah. I'm glad. I can't wait until we don't have to deal with that anymore. No.
Oh, but hold on. Did your friend actually correct you in a text where you said, I hate daylight savings time? And they're like, actually, it's daylight saving time.
So they had posted a meme that basically made the point that it's daylight saving time and not savings. And then I wrote to them being like, are you serious? And they were like, are you being serious? Did you not know this? Like, as if like I should know. And I was being for real. And just, they didn't judge me as much as I thought that they would judge me. But I still thought, like, what are we doing here? Like, why are we having this needless conversation about daylight saving or savings time? I like the idea of waking up and there's sun outside and the sun will be out later. Apparently in Calgary, it's supposed to be out pretty late in the summer months, like past like 9:30 even. Like, I'm down for that. Keep it like this forever.
You get up to Edmonton in the summertime and it's bright. You can golf. I've golfed in Edmonton and kind of been wrapping up on the 18th hole, like after 10 PM. Like it's pretty bright, pretty late, but I don't like, look, if you're going to nitpick, those are the people that also, you know, if you just say like, oh, I gotta, we're going out. I just got to hit the ATM machine.
And they're like, you know, actually, it's not ATM machine because it's the M stands for machine. You know what I mean? Like, just let it go. Just let it go.
You know, it's funny. Like, ATM, I do just say the ATM. Yeah, ATM machine.
But if somebody says ATM machine, I'm not going to be like, well, actually.
Well, actually, you know, sir, it's actually just ATM. You don't have to. You could add the accent if you want to. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know why you felt the need to add the accent, but it's good. It's good.
That's my pretentious accent. If you want to feel pretentious about things, you just sound like this, as if you know everything you should know about everything. Anyway.
I like, see, producer Chris is jumping in with the, I don't like when people say, you know, I was up till 2 a.m. in the morning. Yeah. Hey, we all have our thing.
Until 2 a.m. in the morning. I would say, you know, it like that because, you know, that's just how I talk. I don't know.
Okay. So look, as much as we're talking about, springing the clocks forward, you and I need to turn the clock back to exactly 1 week ago.
Oh, okay.
It was on the Monday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show 7 days ago that we were like, wow, we're living alternate lives. I'm covering the upbeat, fun, here we go, plucky Ottawa Senators on the precipice of a playoff race. You're covering the super stale, downtrodden Calgary Flames. Well, guess what? 7 days later, it's like that Freaky Friday movie, and we've once again switched bodies. Freaky Friday, that was the movie, right? Freaky Friday?
Freaky Friday. Shout out, even though I'm not happy that Angela Bassett was robbed, but Jamie Lee Curtis, who was in Freaky Friday, won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for her role in Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a great acceptance speech, too. But I can't believe what a difference a week makes, because in Ottawa, in the last 7 days, they've lost to Chicago, Vancouver, and Calgary. Now, Calgary's a little bit different because they are sort of in the playoff mix, so to speak.
Sort of.
But Ottawa's just... all of the enthusiasm, everything that I came onto this week, I was telling you I had goosebumps and chills down my spine. It's gone. It's been replaced by cynicism. Here's how I want to just describe the situation. I don't want to belabor the point too long.
Right.
But if you remember, just before the trade deadline, Ottawa played two games against Detroit. And the feeling was, you know, these are huge games for both these teams. Ottawa beat them down in both games. And in the process, it sort of set the course or the trajectory for both teams going into the trade deadline, right? Detroit, Steve Yzerman kind of threw his hands up and was like, well, you know what? We're not there. We're going to be a seller. Pierre Dorion was like, no. I owe it to these guys. Jacob Chychrun, come on down. Okay? Mm-hmm. As we sit here today recording this podcast, Ottawa is 1 point ahead of Detroit.
No.
So for all of the bluster, all of the Ottawa definitively, you know, drove a stake through the heart of Steve Yzerman and Dylan Larkin and the Red Wings, they're 1 point clear of them.
Yeah. So it's funny. You know what's funny too? I think it was last year where Pierre Dorion had a conversation with Pierre LeBrun.
Whoa. Wait.
Well, actually, that's kind of funny for me to Frenchicize you, Pierre Dorion's name, but are you not just do going that into full, to Pierre LeBrun's name.
No. You're just trying to show off your full range of
accents.
No,
I'm not. That's just how I talk.
You said Pierre Dorion. And you're like, no, sorry, Pierre Dorion. Like,
God. No, now you're... You know what? I shouldn't even worry about that. Someone's going to get mad in the comments that I say names in French.
No. I just think it's funny
happened before on this podcast. Maybe not on this day, but it's happened before where people are like, well, how can you? I did an episode with Sean Gentile I think last year. And so it was like, Sean, how did you handle it when your partner was just saying all these names in French? It was just like, what? Anyway, that's a whole other gripe. What I was going to say is last year, Pierre was saying like, okay, like I hope this trade deadline would be the last one where we're selling at the deadline, and for him to be in a position where like this year was the year he could actually buy at the deadline against Jacob Chychrun and everyone's happy and over the moon and all that, like that must have felt really good. And especially if in a case for Pierre where he doesn't have to like over justify being a buyer, like he had every right to buy as far as I'm concerned. But the fact that they're only a point up on Detroit and they're 6 points out of a wild card spot. Like, that's kind of tough. Like, even Calgary is like only 5 points out of a playoff spot technically, and the team that has that spot has 3 games in hand on them. Like, it's not fun times for either of our teams right now. It's looking real dicey for the Senators and the Flames.
Is it looking dicey for the Nashville Predators? Like, here's what you want to talk about the craziness of how much things have shifted since the trade deadline. Remember, they traded Matthias Ekholm, and they traded, Janot, and they traded all these guys, and you're like, well, that's it. Retooling and rebuilding or whatever in Nashville.
Yeah, restocking for Barry Trotz when he becomes GM.
Right, but the Predators have 3 games in hand on Winnipeg, and are 6 points back of them. So whereas Calgary, you know, they don't really have the games in hand in their favor, Nashville does. And from a points percentage standpoint, Nashville's playing at 570, so they're a little bit behind Winnipeg. But are the Predators a lot? Like, if we're going to pick one team from the West to make a charge, is there an argument that that team is actually Nashville and not Calgary?
I mean, if the Predators keep themselves up and they take advantage of those 3 games, absolutely. 7-2-1 in their last 10 games, we should add, with the Nashville Predators. I don't know if it's weird to say, but, like, you know what? I wonder with that. I almost said, like, you know what? They're playing with house money. But when you sell at the deadline, you would think the intention is to, you know, sort of get worse. So the fact that they're still in this position, even though they sold, I wonder how Nashville Predator fans feel about that. I wonder how David Boyle feels about that. Maybe the players are feeling something. They want to win one for David or something like that. But yeah, especially in Calgary right now, like, a lot of people are looking at that team. They're looking at the Avalanche, they also have 3 games in hand on the Flames. Like, it makes it dicey for them. But for the Preds, if they find a way to win, they find a way to make it work, maybe. But even then, like, it would take I wonder about that. Cause like is if Colorado's in that spot still and Winnipeg gets points and, like, they fall out in favor of Nashville, like, I don't know if I want to live in a world where we don't have the reigning cup this year's reigning cup champion in the playoffs because Nashville had a run, you know? That's just my feel.
But we might live in a world where we don't have the reigning President's Trophy winner in the playoffs from Florida last year, right? Like, they're very much in a fight, and it's remarkable, right? Like, it is. You know what's funny is that Calgary and Florida engineered one of the biggest trades we've ever seen in the cap era of the NHL. And you wrote the great deep dive into Jonathan Huberdeau. Go ahead. You can say his name the way you want. Jonathan Huberdeau.
Jonathan Huberdeau, yeah.
Okay. In exchange for Matthew Tkachuk. And, you know, Mackenzie Weegar was in that deal. Wouldn't it be something if the two teams that engineered a blockbuster deal, both of them were playoff locks last year. Florida won President's Trophy. The Flames won the division, right? In the regular season.
Like, yeah, they were a good team.
You would both miss the playoffs after making such a deal. It's really eye opening.
What's really interesting too is that like Matthew Tkachuk is having this MVP board like type season. And I think it's fair to wonder, like, if he stayed in Calgary at least one more year, how would that, like, would that have translated? Would he have played at that level with the Flames? And if he plays at that level, how many more points does that team get? I think if both teams miss, it is very fair to wonder what both teams would have been like had they not made that deal. I think we start getting into that territory. I'm not saying both teams regret that deal. I still think, like, it's something that could eventually work out for both sides. I think Florida's seeing more of those benefits right now, but even then, like, they might still miss the playoffs anyway. But that might also have nothing to do with the trade and more just with the change in personnel. Because remember, like Andrew Brunette was leading that team, and they had the style, and they won the President's Trophy. It's a different coach leading that team right now. So who knows what it would have been like if they didn't make that trade, but they still put Paul Maurice in as head coach.
Sounds to me like I just gave you a potential story idea. What if they never made the trade? And you pick the brain of Dom and Shayna to kind of get the analytics model, and you swap out those guys and you see what the impact would be. And do they play each other again? They don't play each other again, do they, Florida?
They don't play each other again. They already played the two games they would have played this year. But that is a very interesting idea.
Yeah. That's all we do here. We just workshop ideas.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah. It's to our benefit, man. We gotta get those views. We gotta get some subs. You know, we gotta get that working.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I gotta say, do we need to collectively write an apology to Ron Hextall and the Pittsburgh Penguins? Remember, as we're talking about all these teams at the deadline that, you know, Detroit and Ottawa and Nashville, and all, we made these sort of definitive statements about what we thought they were at the deadline. And Pittsburgh was certainly, like, I think if you had to ask the average hockey fan, pick the team that was the biggest loser at the deadline, I think we all pointed at Pittsburgh, right? Like, it felt that way. And the Penguins, Julian, are on a roll. I hate to say this to people. They're on a roll. And I watched overtime yesterday, and they pull it out again. They're 7-1-1 in their last 9 games. Remember, about 2.5 weeks ago, they lost. They gave up 7 goals to Edmonton. You know, we were at the point where, like, Rob Rossi and Josh Yoey were like every day they were like taking turns with a sledgehammer to the entire organization. It was great stuff. It was really passionate, authentic stuff. Penguins are 7-1-1 in their last 9. I don't want to say they're a lock to make the playoffs, but boy, they're in most models, including Dom's, they're at north of 90%. Do we owe the Pittsburgh Penguins a collective apology? Yes or no?
No.
No.
The reason why is because I want to see what this team looks like in the playoffs. Do you remember what the last two postseason campaigns have been like for the Pittsburgh Penguins when they're in the playoffs with the players that they have and the way they competed in those first round series against, well, I think the Islanders and the Rangers respectively? Do you remember why the Penguins lost those first round series?
I want to say goaltending was part of the issue, wasn't it?
It was the main issue. It was very much the main issue. They went through a series against the Rangers where they were down to Louis Domingue.
That's right.
Goaltending has not helped them.
They took that to a 7th game last year, didn't they?
They did. They did. But they also had a lead in that series, which they blew to the New York Rangers.
And wait, was it not over? Yeah, it was overtime in the game 7.
It was overtime in game 7. It was a really good series. It was a great series. The reason why I'm not here to give any apologies or anything like that to the Pittsburgh Penguins, I am tired of putting faith in this team when goaltending might still bite them in the ass anyway. That's just my feel. I mean, good for them that they were able to get these wins in and they're able to put themselves in a position where they look more and more like a team that'll get in the wild card. Just for me this year, I'm probably going to pass on hitching my wagon to Ron Hextall and them boys over there. I know you can't discount Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, but like I've seen it twice already. I'm not getting fooled a third time. That being said, there's one other thing I want to bring up. What do Ron Hextall, I'll throw Sheldon Keefe in there too, and Lindy Ruff have in common?
Oh God, this is like, this sounds like a joke. This is the start of a joke. What do Lindy Ruff, Lindy Ruff, Sheldon Keefe, and Ron Hextall?
And Ron Hextall all have in common. And maybe this isn't a perfect thing, but stay with me on this one.
Okay. I'm assuming is it contractually based? Is it?
Not even a contractually based thing. All three of those people, at some point this year, people were wondering about their job security. and and maybe less so in the case of Sheldon Keefe, but I know for sure for Lindy Ruff and I know for sure for Ron Hextall, a lot of people wanted their jobs fired.
Yeah.
And essentially right after that, good stuff happened anyway. Remember there were people who wanted Sheldon Keefe fired at the beginning of the year?
Yep.
The Leafs ended up playing really well. They took off, and now they're going to be a lock for the playoffs. Lindy Ruff, remember the first game of the year? People were booing
Fire
Lindy Ruff.
Fire Lindy. Yep.
The New Jersey Devils are going to be a playoff team. And we're probably going to talk about the fact that they're going to be playing the New York Rangers in the first round. Ron Hextall. I mean, if you can go back and read Rob Rossi from about 10 days ago, where he was asking about Fire Hextall chance. And now we're talking about them being as good as they've been. There's something like last year, everyone was throwing jerseys on the ice. This year, it's like if you want your team to do something, like boo your coach or GM mercilessly, and maybe something will happen.
Man, yeah, it's a good point because, you know, the Fire Lindy chants were there at the beginning of the season. Then they were Sorry Lindy, which was
Sorry Lindy,
a great turnaround,
a good 180
turnaround from fans. It was you very rarely see that type of ownership from fans to say, hey, we got it wrong. But you know what I'm scared about? You just said Devils Rangers round one. I got to tell you, that's in jeopardy because The Devils have been red hot. They've now tied Carolina for first place. And
yes, that's true.
I don't think enough people, myself included, realized that until late last week when I was kind of looking at the standings because, you know, Toronto Tampa is locked in. Like, you can go ahead and start setting that up. And I thought about 2 or 3 weeks ago, we were kind of there with Devils Rangers. Like, boy, this is feeling like we're going to see Devils Rangers. Now it's up in the air. And the Devils have a realistic chance of winning that division. Now, I looked it up. Unfortunately, we don't get a head-to-head game, Jersey and Carolina, at the end of the season or in the final 15 games. Wouldn't that have been a ton of fun?
Yeah.
Head-to-head, watch them play. We don't get one of those. We also don't get Dallas and Minnesota are only separated by a point in the Central Division. They don't play again head-to-head. And LA and Vegas, they have one game left between them, but there's a three-point gap there. But that's about it. Like, I don't think we're going to get the kind of divisional showdown game that maybe we wanted, but I think we need to be a little bit or keep our minds open to the fact that Devils Rangers, it's not a lock at all. Like, at all.
Damn. Which would have been, I mean, if you look at, I mean, if we were to put together a little playoff bracket right now, like, if you're ESPN or TNT, even if you're Sportsnet, or, you know, you look at that first round series and you're like, oh, wow, like, you know, New York, New Jersey, like that whole geographic matchup, but also just with those two teams. Like, I love that. Plus the history they have between them. Like, I please don't take that series away. That's no disrespect to Carolina, which, you know, think about them and what they could go through. I think if they get a Hurricanes Rangers series, like the Hurricanes are probably the favorite in that series. But that's not nearly as fun as like New Jersey and the Rangers. And you go back to like what they went through in 94 or like Stephane Matteau and all these other different memories. Like, I want that. Like, I want people to go back on a series like that and have that nostalgia come back. So this is just personal preference more than anything. But also big up to the New Jersey Devils who continue to surprise everyone with the year that they're having. Again, as we were talking about earlier with rebounding from the boos for Lindy Ruff to having this dynamic team and having a guy like Jack Hughes turn into this star before our eyes, and they land the biggest fish at the deadline. Like, go for it, man. Like, I mean, this Devils team, just, I really didn't see these guys coming. I don't think they were the biggest thing. I don't think they were the biggest prediction I got wrong, but like, I really didn't see this coming.
No, I don't think anybody did. This wasn't just a mini step forward. This is a quantum leap forward, and they've put themselves into the upper echelon of this league. Now, we were talking about Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh's likely going to get in as a wild card team.
Right.
So if you're Carolina or you're Boston, and you're looking at potential first round opponents, and you're looking at those wild card spots, and you see one of them is held by Pittsburgh, one is held by the Islanders, and the Florida Panthers are also right in the mix. Who's the team you want to face out of those three? Because With the Penguins, you have the trifecta of Letang, Malkin, Crosby. With the Islanders, you have a Vezina-caliber goaltender in Sorokin. And in the Panthers, you would have a team that won the President's Trophy last year and obviously would have played well enough to sort of get into the playoffs so they'd begin on a roll. You have to pick, out of those three teams, who would you want to face if you were Carolina or Boston? Or New Jersey, let's be honest, or New Jersey. New Jersey might still win the division. Which is the wildcard team you want to face in round one?
Man.
I think it might be Pittsburgh, and it's crazy to say that.
That's interesting, man.
Is it the Islanders?
I don't want anything to do with the Islanders. As long as Ilya Sorokin's playing really well, I don't want anything to do with those guys. If I'm Carolina, Jersey, Boston, whatever, I don't want anything.
Does John Tavares have that T-shirt that says "I don't want anything to do with the Islanders"?
Oh,
I think so. Too soon.
Zing.
You want Florida?
I think I'd take Florida. I think maybe
Bobrovsky.
Yeah, that's it, right?
That's a good point.
For me, with in the playoffs, goaltending is such a huge thing. And that's why I poo-pooed on the Pittsburgh Penguins the way that I did. Like, yes, Tristan Jarry could be a play like a good goalie, but if he's not healthy or if he's not playing well, like, the Penguins fold. At the same time, maybe they don't. Sergei Bobrovsky, though, it's a bit unfortunate to say, but, like, he has not been the goalie we expect him to be. You know that long-running joke that Jay Onright had about Sergei Bobrovsky, about him being on the case? Officer Sergei Bobrovsky.
Officer on the case.
Sergei Bobrovsky should have handed in his badge and gun years ago, if we're being honest. So I'd take Florida easily.
Yeah, maybe. By the way, I appreciate your alliteration of poo-pooing the Pittsburgh Penguins. That's some elite stuff. I didn't even realize that.
Sorry.
Hey, and one other really quick note I want to point our listeners in this direction. We'll just stay in the state of Pennsylvania for 1 second. Because Danny Briere has taken over in Philly. Had a press conference on the weekend. I got to say, Charlie O'Connor's piece on the weekend saying it's time to turn the page from Flyers culture. Stop being connected to the glory days of the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. You need to go outside of the box to bring in some outside thinking. I got to tell you, this is when writers kind of just write from the heart. You know, Mark Lazarus has had some great columns this year on Chicago. I think Rob Rossi and Josh Yoey have done a great job in Pittsburgh. Go check out Charlie O'Connor's piece on the Philadelphia Flyers and the time to turn the page on Flyers culture. It is a chef's kiss. It really is. Like, this is what you want out of the reporters who cover your team, is you want somebody who's going to write with passion. I think Drantz does this really well.
Drantz does such a great job.
The issue you run into when you do this is twofold. One, obviously, the management, ownership, they get their back up. They're like, hey, get. And two, you get a portion of the fans who are like, how come you don't love this team and whatever. But the majority of people who really get it. And just go read this piece from Charlie and tell me at the end of it, you don't feel like, yeah, it's time for a change in Philly. Time for a change. It's great. It's a really good piece.
Yeah, the piece is called "It's Time for Flyers to Finally Move On from the Past and a Culture That's Been Holding Them Back." Just look at the Flyers. Like, as long as I've seen them, they're this team that, you know, is just this gritty, tough team. And I don't know if that'll ever really go away, just with how the DNA of just Philadelphia just is. But I wonder now with Danny Briere, who spent a couple years in Philadelphia and basically was promoted with it from within. You spent his time in the ECHL with Maine Mariners, which was associated with the Flyers, and then eventually gets promoted within, as I mentioned before. But, like, I wonder how Charlie feels about that. If he feels that's more of the same and not that departure from that culture that he's talking about.
You know what I think would be a great, we got to get our kind of marketing promo team on this. And you would need to get, like, a company like Sour Patch Kids, or like one of those Warheads, like something super sour, okay? And every week we do an Athletic who's the most sour reporter of the week. And then we do like a live reading. We do like a live reading of a portion of their column. And we're like, this is brought to you by, you know, when, insert company name here. The most sour report of the week, it's Charlie O'Connor. And we do like a live reading of a portion, of, like the most sour portion of the column gets read out. And, you know, because somebody's always angry out of the, you know, in the NHL, someone's always angry. Who's the most angry? Who's the most sour?
Here's my thing about that segment idea. Twitter exists. And I think if, because like, it's one thing for people to write a column and to make it work. I guess if we just focus on our guys and, you know, that would probably be a good idea for us. But
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But there are people who are going to like, how are you going to feel if we say, all right, the sour reporter of the week is Matthew Fairburn, who covers the Buffalo Sabres, when Jim Matheson in Edmonton is saying, why are you so pissy to Leon Draisaitl again?
No, like, it's the Athletic.
I know.
Sour reporter brought to you by Sour Patch Kids.
I know. It's great that we would do it internally. It's just knowing how people get, you know, I just find it's going to be very funny that if we focus on a guy who's sour internally with us, but then someone online, like, I don't know. I don't mean to mention Jim Matheson's name. I don't have any issue with him. It's just an example. But, like, that's just my one thing. Like, what if we do it one week and some reporter goes viral for something crazy? And it's like, yeah, he's not sour. We completely ignored that. We've ignored it.
They're not eligible for the award.
They're not eligible. Oh, but that's my one thing. But other than that, I'm all for that. I'm all for more sponsorships and more fun stuff on this show.
Okay. So speaking of awards, a couple of award related topics here that we want to get to before we open up the emails and get some feedback, which you have a lot of fun things to get to. I feel the need to point this out to people.
Yes.
Connor McDavid is leading the National Hockey League in goals, assists, and points. Okay. And on the surface, you'd be like, yeah, thanks, Tips. That's a great piece of information. We all knew that. Here's what you didn't know. I'm going to ask you this question, Julian McKenzie.
Yes.
How many times in the salary cap era, so 05, 06 to now, has a player ended this, and I'm going to need the names, but how many players have ended the season leading the league in goals, assists, and points? How many times? And which players?
In the salary cap era?
Salary cap era.
So Connor McDavid has not won because he's never won a Rocket Richard trophy, but that'll probably change. In the salary cap era, so since 2006, really, to now, goals, assists, and points.
And listeners, feel free to play along. Yell at your smart speaker, your phone, whatever you're listening to us. Yell out the answers. We will hear you.
Is Nikita Kucherov one?
Nikita Kucherov, no good.
Oh God! This is where I look bad. I'm just gonna guess a number here. I'm gonna say only three people have done it.
Okay, I'm gonna tell you. Now you're gonna get mad at me. It's not been done in the salary cap era.
God damn it!
Okay. Now we're gonna stretch it back further. Now I'm gonna ask you, who's the last player to outright lead the league? Goals, assists, and points. So they didn't tie, like somebody didn't tie them for goals and they led in assists and points. You know what I mean? Like they outright, end of the year, number one, nobody tied with them, goals, assists, and points. Last guy to do it.
Mario Lemieux.
Sorry, what was his name?
Mario Lemieux. Oh my God. Leave me alone.
Okay. Mario Lemieux is incorrect because there are two seasons in which Lemieux was the leader in goals, assists, and points, but somebody tied him in assists both the times. One time was Ron Francis. One time was Wayne Gretzky. Julian, nobody has led the NHL outright in goals, assists, and points since Wayne Gretzky in 86-87.
Wayne Gretzky was going to be the first person I thought of, and I thought, there's no way. Maybe Mario did it.
So what I'm asking you, and I'm asking the listeners, because in Major League Baseball, they have the triple crown. If you lead the league in batting average, home run, RBI, you win the triple crown. Okay? We need to come up with a name for this, leading the league in goals, assists, and points. And I'm going to tell you why. how rare it is. So to outright lead it, you've got Gretzky, who not surprisingly did it five times in the 80s. The only other person to do it since expansion was Phil Esposito, 72-73. Esposito did it. That's it. So the list, if McDavid can continue his current pace and hold up in goals, assists, and points outright, nobody ties him, he would join Phil Esposito, Wayne Gretzky as the only ones to do it post-expansion. Then I decided, let me look up every season pre-expansion. I'm going to go right back to 1917.
This is an amazing amount of research. Okay?
Well, it's not me. A Hockey Reference. Hockey Reference is a great tool. Now there's only a couple of other guys who've done it. Gordie Howe.
Yes.
And Howie Morenz. Newsy Lalonde. Anytime I can work Newsy Lalonde into a podcast, I will. He did it in 1919, but he had a share of the assist lead. So again, in terms of outright leading the league and nobody ties you for anything, in the history of the game, it's Howie Morenz, it's Gordie Howe, it's Phil Esposito, it's Wayne Gretzky. McDavid would be the fifth. We need a name for this phenomenon. I mean, we can't call it the Triple Crown because...
Why can't we call it the Triple Crown?
First of all, baseball has it, and there's already a Triple Crown.
Horse racing also has it, too, for if you win three races. Like, it's just like a... It's like a term that, like, could be universal for any sport. Yeah,
but,
like,
but hockey already has a Triple Crown kind of reference connotation to a great LA Kings line of the 1980s with Marcel Dion and Charlie Simmer, and I think it was Dave Taylor. I think.
Yeah, but maybe, like, I'm wrong, but on, like, that. Why can't we make that into an award? I don't have a problem with that.
We need a name for this. What, like, the hat trick?
I don't like that.
Okay, you don't like the hat trick. We would like to hear from our listeners. Give us a, if you think Triple Crown's the name, that's the name. But we need to do something this.
Is it weird to just name it after the first player who did it? So just name it the Howie Morenz Award or Howie Morenz?
Yeah, I mean, Howie Morenz was kind of, he was the phrase they used on Howie Morenz back in the day is he's the Babe Ruth of hockey. Like that was the comparable. He was Babe Ruth of hockey. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's nothing, no major award named after Howie Morenz. Gretzky, there's no award named after Wayne Gretzky, and he did it five times. I mean,
Howie Morenz, I think, would be okay because, like, he's obviously an NHL legend, even if it was from a eras gone by. But, like, that would be cool. For Wayne Gretzky, who, yes, is the greatest player who's ever lived to this point, is that the award you want to name in his name? Wouldn't you want to name, like, MVP in his name or something else? Like,
yeah, this is a little,
like,
niche.
That's my thing. Yeah, like, that's too, like, I think if Howie Morenz gets that award, like, that's cool. I think that award would be too niche to be named after Wayne Gretzky.
Okay, so hit us up. If you think Triple Crown is the name, that's fine. I'm willing to live with Triple Crown. It just kind of feels like Triple Crown's been done. Horse racing.
I mean, even then, like,
MLB.
Wait, I have a question. Dumb question. If you lead the league in, I think it's what, home runs, RBI, batting average, do you win an actual award or is it just like you just have won? So I guess you don't really have to name it anything. It's just a Triple Crown. Yeah. That's all the more reason to keep it as Triple Crown. If you want to have it as an actual, like, oh, cool, you did this. Here's an actual honor that solidifies what you did. You name it after that. But if you're not really going to win anything, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But, like, Triple Crown works just fine.
Okay. Hit us up in the comment section. Email to theathletichockeyshow@gmail.com. Give us a name. Tweet at us as well. Give us a name for what McDavid might do this year. Goals, assists, points, outright leader in all three categories. It's only been done by four other players in the 100-plus year history of this game. And I think not enough people have taken notice of that.
I agree with that.
You know what? I think we should. I'm going to pitch a story on this. I'm going to pitch a written story on this.
You and Sean McIndoe should work on a story like that.
There you go. Okay. So we'll. All this whole podcast only exists to just give us ideas for written assignments. That's all we're doing.
Thank God. Thank God. Cause I don't know where I'd be without them.
Exactly. Hey, I know one other award related thing you wanted to hit on, and it kind of relates to basketball, where the NBA and the NBA's Players Association, have been in talks about kind of trying to figure out, hey, do we need a threshold of games played to win a major award. So you want to win the MVP, that's all well and fine. You better play X amount of games. And I'm wondering, is there a need for us to have that conversation in the hockey world? I don't think so. I don't think like load management, game management has infiltrated this sport to the extent that it has in basketball, but I don't know. I'm open to having the conversation. Like I think if you want to win the MVP, there's a good chance you're going to have to play 70 games of the season, right?
Exactly. Like I feel like if we, like I saw it, our colleague on the NBA side, Sham Charania, put that out in his column that dropped Monday morning, that both sides have been talking about this. And it made me think immediately that, you know, if you're worrying about load management in the NBA, in which players will, you know, not play entire seasons, they sit out because of injury and rest and recovery. Like, if you're one of those players and you're thinking so much about awards, like, you know, that's what you might be worried. But also, there's a good chance if you're at a position where you're load managing, you might not have to think about that as much. So the comparable with hockey for me is, or at least the thing I'm thinking of with hockey is this. Could you imagine a world in which Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid have won just about as much as they could win individually, and they are so focused on doing everything they can to put themselves in a position to go on a lengthy Stanley Cup run that they go to their bosses and say, you know what? Two-game road trip out in, I don't know, in the Midwest somewhere, I'm going to sit that one out. Say, like, you get to a point where, like, those two players, like, they say, okay, you know, I'm in for next year, but, like, let me get 15 games off so I can rest this right knee. Or at least they couch it in a way that it's not, like, specifically load management, because they don't really care that much about, I mean, not specifically because they don't care about winning awards, but, like, I feel as if, like, that conversation has to go hand in hand with load management, with the awards and stuff. And I'm just thinking if those two players get to a point where they're like, you know what, man, I don't really care that much about like trying to win a Rocket Richard. And we've seen Connor McDavid at least put himself out there and do it. And people are wondering if that's the case with Austin Matthews too. Like, that's what I feel like we'd see. Like, and I don't know if I'm way too far down the rabbit hole, but like, that's something that crossed my mind. I don't know if it would explicitly happen, but it's something I thought about.
Yeah. I don't think we're in that. We're not quite in that spot, right? Where
because no one really does that like that in the NHL. No.
Yeah, it's you know, it's funny. It's not really ingrained in the culture of the game, right? To take a day off here or there when it might actually make a ton of sense to do it, right? Like if you want to stay fresh and healthy for the grind that is April, May, and into June, why not take a handful of games off in February and March, right? Like if your team is set for the playoffs, if your team is, you know, kind of in a safe spot, right? Like, that's a great point. It's a great question. I'd have to look back. Like, I'm looking at a list of all the Hart Trophy winners, for example, in recent NHL history, but it doesn't sort them by games played. And I'd be curious, like, I wonder what's the fewest number of games that somebody has played in a season in which, like a skater, not like Dominik Hasek or Theodore, but like somebody who played a full season and won the MVP. I'm betting nobody has played fewer than 75 games.
Yeah. And I think that should be like 70, 75 should be like a threshold, maybe 60 to a certain extent, but like you can't be playing 41 games and saying, oh, I did enough to be considered for this award. Like that's not fair.
No, exactly. So anyway, would love to hear from people if they have any thoughts on, what should there be a minimum kind of games threshold on major awards? And if it is, what is that number? Is it 60, 65, 70? You know, 70 seems like the highest it could go. If you're going to go to 75, it just feels like, well, what if a guy's hurt for 2 weeks, right? Then
yeah,
then that's it. Like that seems ridiculous. So yeah, I mean, 70 might be the number. So
also, I'll just say for people who are listening to this part, I completely understand that is very much a premature conversation to have with regards to the NHL. But I think it was still just worth just even kind of thinking about in any case.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, Fidelity, how can I remember to invest every month?
With the Fidelity app, you can choose a schedule and set up recurring investments in stocks and ETFs.
Oh, that sounds easier than I thought.
You got this.
Yeah, I do. Now, where did I put my keys?
You will find them where you left them.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Let's open up the emails, shall we? And
let's do
the
it.
Mailbag. We got lots of comments that came in. Again, you can drop us a comment in the Athletic Hockey Show. You just go to the comment section. You've got to kind of follow the, as Gentile likes to say, you follow the trail. Leave us a comment. We read them all. We love to engage with our listeners. Or you can tweet at us, or you can send us emails to theathletichockeyshow@gmail.com. So last week, Julian, you and I said, boy, Boston, they're giving us 2019 Tampa vibes, you know, vibes of a team that's just too good in the regular season. The Bruins, by the way, this week, or last week, sorry, I should say, fastest team in NHL history to reach the 50-win plateau. I put it out to the listeners with you and said, let's make this interesting. We don't think the Bruins are going to win the Stanley Cup this year. In fact, I said, I don't even think they're going to get to the Cup. Want to hear from some listeners? So we got a few coming in here. I'll read just a few of them. One commenter writes in, I'll take that Bruins bet with you guys. They're too stacked. I've got a couple of Jason Robertson rookie cards for the listeners if I lose. So let's make some terms and let's make this interesting. Okay. So
that's cool.
It's one listener willing to put up some Robertson rookie cards. Maybe we find out. Maybe we just act as like a third party broker here and we find another listener that's like, I'll take the, I see the Jason Robertson rookie cards and I got this, whatever.
Yeah, we do like a giveaway or something. Or, like if we did, we do like a giveaway.
Okay. Another texter says, I'll take you guys up on your Bruins bet, and here's the deal. Loser has to write a passionate poem about Brad Marchand licking their face.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, that's gross.
And the last one here also involves Brad Marchand. If Boston makes the Stanley Cup final, the two of you need to personally apologize to Brad Marchand via Zoom. Allow him to berate both of you, and then you release it as your bonus content.
That would be the most humiliating moment in my journalism career.
Brad Marchand is not going to agree to come on a Zoom call with us.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Are you sure? You're 100% no sure?
I would say, I would put that at, No.
I don't know. Not I mean, dude seems to insert himself in a lot of random like Twitter stuff. Like, I think if there's an opportunity for him to kind of just, you know, gloat, like, I'd like to see it. I almost want to bet on the fact that if he would take this on or not.
Nah, he wouldn't. And I don't blame him. Like, that guy is such a good player. He's got a Stanley Cup. He's been to another Stanley Cup. Like, he doesn't need the two of us sitting in the cheap seats, be like, he's not going to engage. I don't see him engaging on this one.
I mean, I don't know, but like he also randomly told like the Arizona Coyotes reporter Craig Morgan to he insulted him randomly on Twitter, or Steve Dangle, like he went at him the other, or he's calling Detroit sus. Like, we don't know what Brad Marchand feels like doing when he feels like doing it. That's what makes him so unpredictable.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good point.
I don't know I forget the exact comment he said about Craig. I think he told him to shut up or something. And the situation had like nothing to do with him. It was I think it was the Troy Stetcher, Trevor Zegras thing. And we're all trying to figure out like what Trevor Zegras did to piss off Troy. And then like Craig, I think, was tweeting about it. And then like Brad Marchand inserted himself in this. And we're like, why did Brad Marchand insert himself in it? And then he gets asked about it. And he's like, whatever. It's just Twitter stuff. Like, don't mind me. So why? So Brad seems to want to do what he wants. Maybe he probably doesn't entertain this at all. Ooh. And it's not going to hurt. It's not going to do anything to us if he doesn't, if it gets to that point.
Yeah.
But
no, I don't think he's going to waste his time. But hey, you never know. Well, hey, we're willing to put some stuff up. I don't know about the poem about Marchand. That might be one of those quick limericks, like the roses are red, violets are blue type of thing. I don't think this is going to be like verses and verses of flowing poetry. But hey, one listener is willing to put up Jason Robertson rookie
roses
cards.
Roses are red. Something. I'm trying to think of a line with lungs. I'm just trying to think of a quick four-bar one here. Like, roses are red. I feel it in my lungs. Your love is as soft as Brad Marchand's tongue.
That was, you know what? I'm getting a little emotional here. A little choked up. That was beautiful.
Hey, yeah, a little quick four bar, you know what I'm saying?
You knew tongue and lung. You went right there. I love it. I've got
that romanticism in me.
Yeah. You can feel it. You can feel it. All right. So we got another topic to get to, which was last week we were saying, you know, remember that Rangers-Flyers game we were talking about where the Rangers took over in Philly, and then you were talking about why Toronto came in to Calgary. And I said, I'd love to know, like, from fans around North America, like, what's the fan base that comes into your building and irritates you the most, takes over your building? And in particular, I said, I'd like to know, are there any non-original six teams that actually invade your building and take over it? So we got a couple here. A couple from Columbus are written in here.
Really?
One listener said, look, Columbus Blue Jackets fan here for you guys. A home game against the Pittsburgh Penguins is a nightmare. So many Penguins fans. They're super vocal. The chants are very audible. You can hear them chanting and cheering on the broadcast too. I don't like going to Jackets games at home when the Penguins are around because they are insufferable. Another texter, also a Jackets fan, saying the biggest ones that invade our building at Nationwide, Penguins, Red Wings, and Chicago. But the Penguins fans are the worst.
Wow, the
Penguins fans at Nationwide. They played some playoff series together, right? Or against each other.
There was at least one, I want to say.
Yeah. So there's a little bit there. We got a Minnesota fan writing in saying, as a Minnesota fan, I love it / hate it when the Winnipeg Jets come to the XL Energy Center. They are loud, friendly, and rowdy. And I'm always battling with their chants, even in the preseason. Great games to attend, even in Winnipeg. They are a blast. So there you go. Wild Jets games.
Yeah, that makes sense, I guess, considering how close. Let me not embarrass myself, but I wonder how close Minnesota and Winnipeg would be in terms of distance. They seem like they'd be close.
Okay. And then we've got a Dallas fan writing in. Dallas fan saying, seems like most of the games are way too many visiting fans are in our house. Part of that is Dallas is full of people who have moved here from other cities. Part of it is it's a good destination to go watch a hockey game. Ticket prices here are relatively low. But my goodness, when Chicago is in town, it is like Christmas. You see red and green all over the place. It is the worst, although it's not as bad now that they're tanking. It's hilarious when a bunch of them decide to show up in Dallas wearing their green St. Patrick's Day Hawks jerseys. It's the same color as Dallas's jerseys.
Yeah.
As a side note, when St. Louis comes to Dallas, Blues fans get in fights in the stands with Stars fans every single time. So there you go. Apparently the Blues fans are rowdy when they go down to Dallas.
Man, everything's big in Texas for a reason, including the fights. St. Louis fans.
Okay, one last one from Chris in Vegas. Ian and Julian, I'm a fan of two teams. I'm a lifelong fan of the Detroit Red Wings and my current home in Vegas with the Golden Knights. But since I've lived here in Vegas for more than 20 years after moving from Michigan, I was one of those annoying fans that would take over another team's building on the road and cheer for the Red Wings. In the late 90s, early 2000s, way easier to get Detroit tickets in Phoenix, Anaheim, and LA than it was for my family back in Michigan to go to the Joe. Poor Phoenix was the worst. Red Wings fans easily made up about 80% of the arena, even when they would meet in the playoffs. But as a Vegas season ticket holder, it's interesting to see how other teams come into Vegas, especially in year number one. Somehow, I think we have the orange curse. Any team that has orange in their jersey seems to have better luck. Better luck at the Fortress than other teams. Edmonton, Islanders, Philly, etc. Islanders seem to have, shall we say, unique cheers. Something sung to the Adams Family theme that implies a relationship with your mother or something. I don't know about that.
I don't know about that at all.
But the Adams Family, I wonder, is that just the Pot Van Sucks chant?
Well, that's not really to the Adams Family. Like, what? Where would your mother come in? I don't get it.
I don't know. And Chris in Vegas also says, when Edmonton showed up for a President's Day weekend game in year one, they helped us set the record for the 50-50 draw. Somebody walked away with 70 grand in that drawing. And P.S., Vegas actually does a 51-49 draw, says Chris. In Vegas, they give you the extra 1%. There you go.
There was an Oilers fan at the Flames-Vegas game I was at, and there was like one guy in an Oilers jersey who was all like, we flew from Edmonton to see the Flames lose, and they showed them on the Jumbotron, and everyone lost their mind.
They would love that. But yeah. But do you think that those people are real, or do teams put plants in the crowd?
I can confirm that for like some of those like Jumbotron stuff, or I'm trying to think, like say like you see like the kiss cam where like, you know, this guy's supposed to be there with this girl. There's a space in between the seats, and there's two people. They kiss or whatever. Then the boyfriend shows up, like stuff like that's fake. But I think that what I saw the other night in Vegas, I thought that was real. I think that's pretty real. But I think there's definitely some fake stuff. There's definitely some planted stuff.
And by the way, speaking of the Addams Family, have you watched Wednesday on Netflix?
I haven't watched Wednesday yet, but okay. Jenna Ortega, man, she's having herself a big
Jenna
year so
Ortega
far.
Is on a heater right now, and
she is on a heater right now.
Wednesday, terrific show, like very funny, like kind of clever, dark, like it's good. I really enjoyed Wednesday.
Am I gonna have to get?
I don't know how to describe it.
I don't
have
Netflix. I have like Disney Plus and I have Amazon Prime. I don't have Netflix though.
Hold on, Julian McKenzie doesn't have Netflix.
I don't have Netflix. I just all the shows I would really want to watch are on on Disney and Amazon Prime. And the few times I've had to watch Netflix, I guess I just kind of borrow from somebody, which I don't think we're allowed to do anymore. So I'm gonna have to maybe a birthday present for myself. I buy myself a Netflix subscription.
Hour into the podcast, realize this guy doesn't have Netflix. Not hour. We've worked together a year, basically a whole season.
The whole season, basically, and a little bit more because we've done all those guest spots and stuff. But I don't have Netflix presently.
Maybe, you know what? Now I understand why you didn't quite get the Friends references. Although Friends is off Netflix now. So
But that's even well before a Netflix thing. Like that's something like, you know, you grow up with and stuff. Like I get it. That goes well beyond that. I don't know.
Are you old enough to remember, like, I don't know if like TBS or whatever would be like the station, and like they would like show classic sitcoms at like 4 and 4:30.
I mean 4:30 in the day, like I'm trying to think.
It's 4:30 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
4:30 a.m.
Yeah, 4:30 a.m. in the morning. I'm trying to think. Like, I remember there was a time I would grow up and I'd watch stuff on TBS. I'm just trying to remember the shows that they would have. Oh God. But I definitely remember if I start hearing some of the names of sitcoms, I would remember. But like, why do I feel like Kings and Queens at one point was running on syndication there?
King
of Queens. Sorry.
Yeah. King of Queens was definitely like that would set you up for an evening of Atlanta Braves baseball. Like it would like King of Queens right into first pitch with John Smoltz. I'm pretty sure.
I'm trying to figure out if any like the Steve Harvey show would have been on BET for me. My Wife and Kids was on CTV for a while. What other really old? One on One was BET. I think a lot of shows that I would think would be on TBS might have been on BET when I was watching as a kid.
But anyway, TBS was a classic.
Yeah. Anyway, we don't need to get in on my old TV watching habits.
Yeah, there we go. All right, I'll tell you what we will do, though. We're going to wrap it up. We're going to go for the Adams Family to the Jack Adams. hey. Of the week, because that's like how that. We do it on this show. We wrap it up with a little Jack Adams of the week. I got to tell you, I like this week because the previous 7 days, we've got three candidates here, Julian. I don't think we've had, certainly one of them we haven't had as a candidate. That's Rick Tocchet, the Vancouver Canucks, perfect 3-0-0. Now, part of that, they got Thatcher Demko back, and that helps, but Rick Tocchet has the Canucks playing better. They go 3-0-0. We talked about Mike Sullivan, the much maligned and beleaguered Pittsburgh Penguins. They get a 7 of a possible 8 points in the week, but so too did the Arizona Coyotes. Andre Tourney, 3-0-1. They beat Minnesota on Sunday. They valiant effort before losing to Colorado in overtime. Tourney, Tocchet, Sullivan. Who gets Julian's Jack Adams of the week?
Mike Sullivan gets it this week because it's all part of the Pittsburgh Penguins seemingly proving everyone else wrong in thinking that they're just this, you know, this sleeping team, but maybe they might be a sleeper when things are all said and done. Tourney and Tocchet, as good as it was for those teams, for Arizona and Vancouver to win all those games, that's just low tank awareness. They're just taking themselves further out of the Connor Bedard sweepstakes. That's not good. That's not good. So
yeah,
I'm going to give it to
Mike
Sullivan.
That's a good point. It's like Andre Tourney did not understand the assignment.
Like, yeah, that's it. And I think he's already won two, and it's fine like the first time, but like if your team keeps doing this, like, I don't know. It's hard for me to do that again. So yeah, Mike Sullivan's my pick.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to go Rick Tocchet. Like Vancouver was an, and again, maybe he doesn't understand the assignment if we're vis-a-vis Bedard, but they got to change that culture, right? They got to change. JT Miller's been playing better. Like I said, Demko's part of it. But Elias Pettersson, to me, is having the best season of his career.
And he is.
I understand Tocchet's not, you know, solely responsible for that because he's only had him for a few weeks. But I got to tell you, Vancouver, like they're on a roll here. 3-0-0. I'm going to give Rick Tocchet my Jack Adams.
Yeah. Elias Pettersson, 30 goals, 82 points to this point. Yeah, he's playing his best year right now. I've always felt that like he was like just this young kid with a lot of great talent who a team like the Canucks can really build around. And obviously they have Quinn Hughes at the back as well. Like it's just, they just need some kind of direction. And I'm pretty sure fans have felt that way for a long time, but they have good pieces there lying underneath the surface. They just need to build a proper team for them to thrive. And hey, maybe Rick Tocchet is that guy to kind of unlock it out of everybody. I still think it's a bit weird that they would make the coaching that not that they would make the coaching change. I mean, the way that we all know how that went about and that was kind of weird, but I still think like bringing Rick Tocchet in now is still kind of weird, especially if they could have put themselves in a position to get Connor Bedard.
You know what? You still have the rhyming thing going on in your brain. You don't even realize it. You just said unlock it with Tocchet.
Oh.
But you didn't even realize
that. I didn't even realize that.
No. Okay. By the way, so who are we deciding on here? Tocchet or Sullivan? Who gets
it? I'm still standing on Sullivan.
Okay. Mike Sullivan it is. Write him down. Sullivan wins the award. This week. Okay. Last award we're going to hand out. It's Multiple Choice Madness. Dom did a great piece this week and it got a ton of traction on the site about 4 days ago because the Norris Trophy feels like the most contentious individual trophy, right? All the other ones, Hart feels like it's McDavid. You know, Rookie of the Year feels like it's Matty Beniers, but the Norris is like a 4 or 5 person race. So here's the question for you to wrap it up. If you're voting today, Julian, who gets your vote for the best defenseman, Norris Trophy winner 2022-23? Is it A, Erik Karlsson, B, Hampus Lindholm, C, Adam Fox, D, Rasmus Dahlin, or E, somebody else? Who would get your vote right now?
Man, it's so tough. Like, I honestly, like I want to live in a world where Erik Karlsson should be the undisputed winner. But we've seen defensemen have, like, high-scoring seasons the way that they do. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they are the Norris Trophy winner, like for best defenseman. Like they have to show abilities all around, right? Like you can't just be this high scoring defenseman, but then you allow too many goals against. And in that article from Dom, actually, if you look at the leaderboard in terms of game score value added, like there's a 3-way tie at the top on that with Adam Vox, Hampus Lindholm, and Brent Burns, actually. But
I was shocked to see Burns in there.
Brent Burns is having like a sneaky underrated year, and I know that because I have him in fantasy. He's having like a pretty good year. I think people were worried with his age and how he would play in Carolina, yeah. But he's actually having a pretty decent season so far. If I have to make a pick, I guess off the fact that the GSVA is up there, he's actually putting together some pretty good numbers while also being good defensively. I think ultimately I might give it to Adam Vox. I think we're in an era now anyway where we're going to see that Norris Trophy go back and forth between Adam Vox and Cale Makar anyway. But that's who I would pick today on March 13th. It's entirely possible when it comes time for ballots, which, by the way, as a new member of the PHWA, do I get to vote on the Norris, right? Do I get to vote on the Norris?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, we vote on the Norris. Yep.
Oh, I know we as reporters do, but like as a first, like someone who legit got their like PHWA card like a couple months ago.
So you know what? You know what? It's not everybody with a PHWA card definitively gets to vote. Like there is.
That's what I want to know. Like, do I get an opportunity? Like as someone in their first year in the association, do I get to vote on these awards? And how many do I get to?
It will come down to rock, paper, scissors with you and Eric Francis. So you'll play rock, paper, scissors, and the winner emerges with the vote.
Eric Francis? Dude has been covering the Flames longer than I've been alive. Yeah. You might win that off seniority alone. I figured if I was going head toe-to-toe with like Ryan Pike or something, like fine.
No, I don't know. Eric Francis. No, each chapter I think gets 4 votes, 5 votes, whatever it is. And then within that, who's your chapter chair?
Fresh Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. I will have a chat.
So I'd be taking Wes Gilbertson out for a little drink, be like, hey, man, what's going on? You kind of got to cozy up.
Oh, man.
But I don't envy anybody on the Norris vote because I think you can make a compelling case on Carlson, like you said.
Absolutely.
He's going to flirt with 100 points. But so too did Roman Josi last year, and he didn't win. And
that's it. You know, Roman Josi. That's my whole thing too. Roman Josi had an outstanding season last year and didn't win. John Carlson had a really good year a couple years ago and he didn't win. Funny enough, I think Roman Josi won that year. Like, if you are a high scoring defenseman, unless your name is Cale Makar and you find a way to like score put up as many points while being really great defensively, it is not a guarantee that you win the Norris Trophy. And I think a lot of people are seeing the stats that Eric Carlson's putting up and they love the fact that he is having this flashback performance to his Ottawa Senators days. It's just not a guarantee that he will win it because of that.
You know what? I'm torn. And there's part of me that I'd love to see a guy like Hampus Lindholm win it because it would change the narrative a little bit about the award, right? Lindholm is what? He's like plus 40 or whatever he is. But I think what I like about Fox is there's a little bit of a mix, right? Like, it's not all offense or it's not all defense, right? Like, I feel like Carlson and Lindholm are the two extremes, if that's the right term to use, on both ends. And then maybe there's somebody in between that can kind of give you a little bit of both. So I think I come down with you. I think I go with Fox for now, but I could very much have my mind. And I'm open. Like, I want to make this very clear to listeners. Like, if you're very passionate about any of the awards, like engage with me or engage with Julian or engage Please. With anybody who has a vote. It's our job to try and solicit opinions from other people. I take that very seriously. So I try to talk to a lot of people like coaches or general managers or scouts. I try to talk to a lot of people and I don't try to just sit down and like either just look at stats or go off what I think in my mind. So would love to hear from people on the vote for the Norris. Do you think it's Carlson, Fox, Rasmus, Lindholm? Whoever, like, hit us up.
Seriously. I had a whole conversation with, Chris Watkins is his name, who normally does a lot of data work. And I think we know him on Twitter as Yolo Pinato. And I legit just tweeted at him, just be like, dude, like what do we need to do to properly, like, account for certain awards and how we should vote on them? And he tried his best to give me a good explainer through a Twitter thread. And I think that's cool. I think it's cool to, you know, not just be in your own silo and just think you know everything and just think, okay, well, this guy has this many goals, this many assists, this many points. He should win. Like, that's not a guarantee. Like, case in point, back to Carlson. I'm not trying to dump on him. He's having an outstanding year. But, like, of all the defensemen in the top 10 that Don mentions in his article in terms of, I guess, their defensive rate, Carlson is the only one whose, like, defensive number is in the minuses. Like, Adam Fox is at 19.9. This is at the time of the article. Like, Adam Fox is at 19.9. Hampus Lindholm is at 28.5. One name we did not mention at all in terms of a defenseman who probably will not win but has the best defensive, like, number of all these guys, Jarrett Spurgeon at 30.6.
Yeah.
And his GSVA is at 3.1. But, like, he probably won't win because his season is not nearly as flashy as an Adam Fox or an Erik Karlsson or even a Rasmus Dahlin or even a Dougie Hamilton to that effect. But, like, Jarrett Spurgeon, leader on his team in Minnesota, like, he's shown to be a reliable defenseman over the course of his career. But, like, this, the idea of who should win the Norris, like, we know that's very much up for debate. But here's something I want to bring up. If it, like, considering the offensive talents that some of these guys have, what if we had the Paul Coffey Award for best
defenseman? Orr, right?
Or that too, or Bobby Orr, Paul Coffey, the defenseman who exemplifies, like, the best offensive season. Like, you know, you could look at it like to get the most points, get goals, whatever. Like, that would be pretty cool. Because we're not in the day and age now where defensemen just have to be these stay-at-home guys. Like, we can see guys like Erik Karlsson or Cale Makar step up and put up points and contribute just as much, almost as much as forwards. Like, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't have an award that praises a defenseman for showing those offensive capabilities. It's a part of the game. And I think that would be a fun race to watch.
Well, think about, like, we have an award for the best defensive forward.
Yes.
Right? So we laud or we praise forwards for being defensively responsible, but we don't, although I guess the argument is that that's what the Norris Trophy has evolved into. So where I like your idea is that—
I don't think it necessarily has evolved into that, because we just brought up the fact that, like,
Roman
Josi and Karlsson have had offensively good seasons, but they didn't necessarily win for that. I don't think that award has necessarily evolved into that. I think now more than ever, because of the access to information that we have, because of models of what Dom is able to do and what Shane is able to do, I think there's every more reason for people to not just say that if a defenseman has all those offensive stats working in their direction, that they should win. I think there's more and more information that says, like, you know, we can make an informed decision that goes to the true definition of the award, which is a defenseman that shows proficiency in every category of being a defenseman. So being good offensively, defensively, and whatnot.
All right. So listen, we'd love to hear from our listeners on that or anything we've hit on. Hit us up in the comments section. You can tweet at Julian and I. You can also send us an email to theathletichockeyshow@gmail.com. We'll leave it there. Want to, again, remind everybody, drop us the comments wherever you can. You can follow us on YouTube at youtube.com/@theathletichockeyshow. And right now, get a one-year subscription to The Athletic for $2 a month when you visit athletic.com/hockeyshow.
Corsi!